to the lightning round.
Welcome.
Oh my goodness. Hello and welcome to episode 22 of the Dave Kirshner Lightning Round podcast. I am your host, and it is week 37 of the 46 Quadrennial Hunger Games. Oh, what a friggin' mess. Okay, so I didn't record a show last week. My daughter, my oldest daughter, we went to go visit her, and she had a little, like a mini season, a fall season for lacrosse. So they played a number of games, and to be honest with you, there was just, my brain could not process all of the junk that I was being inundated with from this administration, between the supply chain problems, the members of the Senate agreeing to kick the can down the road for the debt limit, soldiers being thrown into the brig because they questioned the superior officer's orders. That's kind of a touchy area because, you know, if you're going to be in the military, yeah, you're going to get some orders that suck. I get it. And it's not quite as compounded as what I experience in the professional world, because I can just simply say, no, I'm not going to do that. That's crazy. How about you try this? You know, you can't really do that in the military. I didn't serve, but that's my general understanding. So he questions and basically calls him out, but we found out later, he'd already submitted his resignation letter. So they gave him a reprimand and charged him, $5,000 for pleading guilty to the 6 charges of basically not following orders. And my understanding is the only time that you can actually do what he did is if you determined that the order that was given was unconstitutional, I think. But again, I didn't serve, so I'm not fluent in the UCMJ, or Uniform Code of Military Justice. I was having a really hard time just processing everything that this, every misstep that this administration has done. And then what actually kind of snapped me out of it, I got an update that that disaster that was running for office, Pete Buttigieg, they named him Secretary of something, Transportation, I don't know. Hold on, let me look. I don't care. Anyway, somehow that idiot made it into the administration of this installed president who has taken less than a year to destroy a robust economy, fixing with it's kind of a Band-Aid, and the border wall is kind of a Band-Aid. You know, Congress needs to fix the immigration issues via codified law, but, you know, getting those two to play nice is, you know, forget it. But, people are running away from this administration as fast as they can. Saw a guy in the grocery store the other day wearing a Biden-Harris t-shirt, and I wanted to walk up to him and be like, do you regret that decision? But I decided to let him wallow in his own disastrous mistakes. But anyway, The stuff about Pete Buttigieg actually snapped me out. I was like, I'm going to record today, damn it, because I'm sick of this. So, you know, I got to thinking about the supply chain issues and the conversations that people are having, both nationally, statewide, locally, You know, people telling us, hey, you know, COVID's, you know, we might have to cancel Christmas and Thanksgiving. You know what? Go pound sand. I'm not doing anything you say anymore because I've had enough. This is ridiculous. You know, it would take 2 weeks to flatten the curve. You know what that actually says when they're saying flatten the curve? They're not saying eliminate COVID. They're simply saying we want to reduce the number of COVID cases so that anybody under that wave, those people can still get it, but there'll be less of them. That's what that said. That's what flatten the curve means. And, you know, it's been, what, almost a year and a half? That's it. I'm done. I don't care what you say. And I'm going around to Columbus these days, and I'm going to different stores, and some of them say, mask required. Screw you. I'm not wearing it. I walk in. I wait for somebody to say, I'll have one in my pocket. But I will literally wait for some Karen to come up to me and start screaming at me to go put on a mask. I mean, I'm not going out there looking for trouble, but I've had enough. And unless some sort of management comes up and says, sir, you know, we do require you to wear a mask, please put on. If they're polite about it, I'll do it. If they want to be a bunch of Karens and start screaming at me, I will literally drop whatever I'm holding and walk out. I'm not going to put it back on the shelf. I'm not going to reply. I'm just literally going to walk away because I'm done. I've had enough of this. This is ridiculous. You cannot have stores implementing mask mandates or employers implementing mask mandates when I can go down the street 2 miles to Ohio Stadium and go to a football game for the Buckeyes and there are 106 to 110,000 people in there and none of them are wearing a mask except for the really old paranoid people or the people that are at risk and they feel better wearing a mask. I don't fault them for wearing a mask. That's their personal choice. If they want to wear it, knock yourself out. I don't want to wear it. I shouldn't have to wear it. And you will not impress upon me your beliefs because you are making decisions out of fear because you are listening to too much mainstream media. You're putting too much credence in anything that Fauci says or that administration that was installed in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I can't even say the guy's name anymore. You know, I used to have fun with it, you know, the jackassery minute, but this guy is so clueless that I can't even get the words of this idiot to come out of my mouth. That's how fired up and irritated I am. But it got me thinking, you know, they start talking about, well, we're not sure if we can have Christmas. Nope, screw you, I'm doing it. We're not sure about Thanksgiving, you know. And now they're saying, well, you may be able to get together for Christmas. We can't stop you from doing that. But there won't be anything on the shelves for you to go purchase for your kids. Because of the supply chain issue. So we got Buttigieg out on paternity leave because he and his husband adopted two kids. And so he's been on paternity leave since the middle of August. The country is literally at a standstill because of supply chain problems. And his boss approves him, or somebody in that man's administration approves him to go on paternity leave. I'm telling you, every single step they take is on a landmine. They're running out of body parts. They've been blown up so many times. This is ridiculous. Now I, you know, can't have Christmas. Well, you know what? My kids are older. We don't necessarily really need to buy them anything. They have anything that they could possibly need or want. You know, maybe some new clothes or you know, some sort of update to a wardrobe, you know, because my oldest daughter's doing student teaching. She's home on fall break this week. And my wife had parent-teacher conferences on Wednesday. And so she contractually, through the union, she has today off. Oh, something fun came in the mail the other day. It was yesterday, I think. It said, your union is lying, was this big, bold letter font on a piece of mail. And, you know, I waited for my wife to open it, and then she opened it and started taking pictures, and she and her friends from work started commenting about it. So I never got to see what it actually said, but it was they were basically implying, you know, they were lying about the implementation of CRT, or critical race theory, which is actually the exact opposite of what Dr. King was espousing from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. You know, but hey, it only took this country, let's call it 60 years to make a complete U-turn, you know. So, anyway, I was in a funk. It just drove me absolutely crazy. But this supply chain stuff really fired me up. So I decided to come in and record a podcast. And plus, compounding the fact was, we were gone for a part of last week. We went to the college campus, and then we had all these weird days off for my youngest daughter. So she was home. My wife was home or not home on some days, and it was really just a weird series of events over the course of the last 2 weeks. So that coupled with my work schedule, I had to work part of last weekend because we did a big conversion and we moved a bunch of data from a series of databases and tables from a competitor that was purchased by my current employer's assignment, if that makes sense. You'll understand. If you're in the IT world, that'll make a lot of sense. You'll read between the lines. I can't say the name of the company that I work for. I can't say the name of the company that I'm currently on assignment with. I can't say the name of the company that they bought, that we did all that. There's some strict employment fireable offenses in there if I mention any of it. So I don't. I'm good about it that way, but, with the supply chain thing, so you got the head of the department that's supposed to be solving the problem out for 2 months on paternity leave. I'm sorry, I maybe I'm old school, maybe this is a new thing, I don't know, but when I had kids, in the early 2000s, paternity leave was limited to about, a week, maybe. You didn't take time off before she went into labor. That was what? I'm going to go hang out with my pregnant wife so that I can do things. No, that wasn't a thing. I don't know what is going on nowadays because I'm not in that boat. But, yeah. So, you know, I was with my wife when she went into labor. We went to the hospital. I was off for probably a week because she was only in the hospital for maybe 2 days. Brought the kid home. And then, you know, we began being inundated with visiting grandparents and wanting to see the new baby. Honestly, there were so many people there, I didn't need to be there. So, you know, I don't know, to each their own. But if you're put in a position to run the Department of Transportation, I think that's what it is. You don't take 2 months off for paternity leave while the country goes to hell in a handbasket because people can't get parts for the broken down 18-wheelers, drive shafts, U-bolts, you know, whatever. I don't care what it is. There are now 77 ships floating outside of the port of Los Angeles, and some of them have been there for 2 and 3 months because the union out there in their contract, it specifically stipulates that only union members can unload the ships. Only union members can move the cargo containers once they've been taken off the ships. So longshoremen are kind of screwing us, but I've said it before. I'm not a fan of unions, for the express purpose of, you know, they served a purpose when we had robber barons and they were literally working people, you know, 15, 16, 18 hours a day. They were working children, that kind of crap. Unions were great, you know, to get better work conditions. That was great. But somewhere along the line, it became, don't get me wrong, they're skilled positions, but, you know, a skilled position that's paying $75 an hour to stare at a computer screen while the robot does all the work, that doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand that. And I'm willing to learn about unions. I just, I just have a hard time with it, especially teachers unions, because they protect the crappy teachers. They literally prevent the school district from firing chronically underperforming teachers, and chronically underperforming workers outside of the education industry are also protected by these unions. And you have to jump through about 9 different hoops, and it's ridiculous. So in that respect, I'm not a fan of the unions when it comes to protecting the underperforming. I just don't get it. So if you're in a union, great, you know, good for you. I don't have a problem with people wanting to be in a union, but you know, when you start seeing where your union dollars are going, so particularly the OEA and, you know, the Education Association, Labor Union or whatever, I don't know the name of the damn thing. We get so much crap mail, I don't even know what's what nowadays. But, you know, they're out there sending all kinds of money and to political candidates, and it's only to Democrats. What does that tell you? Well, here's a fun little thing I was talking to my wife the other day, and I said to her, I said, you know, the Democrats actually created this problem with these parents going to these school board meetings, and railing against the school boards, because when COVID happened and everybody was sent home and they were all doing what basically amounts to distance learning, parents got a first-hand look, a bird's-eye view, if you will, of what was being taught to their children. Because these kids were on laptops, they were on computers. They, you know, whether it was a home computer or the kid had their own laptop, school-issued laptop or iPad or something like that. And so the parents were listening to these lessons that were being taught to their children. And you know, it used to be one thing, you know, it was like, hey, look, I'm the parent, I'm in charge of food, clothing, roof over their head, keeping them warm, keeping them cold, making sure that they're emotionally stable, making sure that I'm teaching them to be responsible, to know right from wrong, to always tell the truth, to not steal. You know, we've got all of this stuff that fits in this giant box called parenthood. And at some point along the way, we took education out of that giant box and we handed it to the local school board and said, look, you guys take care of that. We trust you. And all was good until about the 60s. When they started teaching left-leaning ideology in the classroom. And then these teachers, or these students that went through and began their indoctrination in the late 60s and early 70s, they're now out, and they're college professors, they're high school teachers. They're breeding. They've likely got grandchildren now. So they're pushing their own ideology on these kids, so that when you get to the point now that you have a 3-year-old who doesn't even understand what a penis or a vagina actually is, little boy saying, you know what, I think I'm a girl today. And the parents hear that and they're like, oh my God, we need to transition them. We need to start calling him a her and he a she, you know, at 3 years old. That is child abuse, in my opinion. That is reckless endangerment of a child. Children do all kinds of crap. My kids thought they were fairy princesses until they were 4, 5 years old. I didn't mean I'm going to go transition them to something else. They're still XX. I'm an XY. You know, it just boggles the friggin' mind. You cannot change your genetic code. And, you know, this is the thing that I'm not trying to offend anybody. This is my opinion. But I doubt seriously they're teaching gender fluidity in medical school, particularly those people that are going to be in the forensics area, particularly people that are doing autopsies and things of that nature. because they're going to plunk you down on a cold slab and they're going to say, oh, well, you know, they got the parts for X, you know, male, female. Okay, great. Then you know what they're not going to do? They're not going to say, oh, well, this person identified as a unicorn. This person identified as a peacock or, you know, whatever. They don't. There's no way for you to know what somebody identified as when they're dead. If you're simply looking at their body, you're either male or you are female. You can have the surgery to change said parts, but when they do a DNA test on you, you're coming back as male or female because it is locked into your genetic code. You cannot change that no matter how much you think and wish and pray. Period. I don't even know why I'm on this topic. Oh, the left destroying the education system. I went down a rabbit hole. I'm back out now. So the left actually created this problem. Now they're labeling any parent that dissents against their overarching overlord style rule of the school system, the school district, whether it be state or local. They're now asking the FBI to consider us as domestic terrorists because we're questioning their mental capacity when it comes to education and teaching things that we do not agree with. Shocking, huh? You mean your parents don't like it when we teach the kids about, oh, I don't know, any progressive idea below a grade level that is appropriate for the creation of critical thinking skills. If you're in third grade and your kid comes home and says, we learned all about transgender, transvestite, trans this, trans that, and we had a girl, or we had a guy that was dressed as a girl come in and, drag queen, whatever, you know, red flag, ding, 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 that's a problem. You know, it's not appropriate for kids that are in elementary school to be getting these lessons. You know, they don't have critical thinking skills. They need to wait. If you want to have those lessons, great. But I think you need to wait until late middle school or high school before you have those lessons. I just think that's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. But, you know, we got supply chain problems. We got people on paternity leave. We got an education system that's quickly destabilizing because now all these parents have seen what's being taught. It's a big old honking mess. And, you know, I can't tell you how many containers are actually on these 77 ships. But I know it's not all. I think some of it are oil tankers. But it's mostly container ships. And it is a huge, huge problem. And people are going to have a bigger problem when, you know, you can't get your Thanksgiving turkey and you can't get your Christmas ham or, you know, whatever it is you're going to do for the holidays. Not just for food, all right? So, and I was texting with a friend of mine, and he was lamenting the fact that he went to Firestone, and he spent $500 on two tires. And I was like, dude, that's crazy. I spent $400 on three tires for my daughter's car, because one of the tires blew out, so it was free. It was through Discount Tire, because it was under warranty through them. And I was like, man, I got three tires for less than what you paid for two. That's ridiculous. I went to go look, and sure enough, the prices had changed dramatically from when I put tires on my daughter's car in early August to when he put just two tires on his car in early October. So you're talking about 2 months. And the price went up substantially. We've got serious problems in this country. We've got financial debt problems. We've got supply chain problems. We've got education problems. We've got a destabilization throughout the world because this guy was installed as the president. I mean, it is wreaking havoc worldwide because this guy was installed. And it is just ridiculous. So, anyway, that's all I want to talk about. We'll do a commercial, and we'll come back. And now we pause for some shameless self-promotion. Do you want to know more about what makes me tick? Then go to my website at davidjkirshner.com and read about my latest adventures on the blog, discover what books and websites I recommend, download my research white papers, find the latest episode of the podcast, and discover more recipes that were not in my Just a Small Gathering book. Or perhaps you want to contact me for advice, ask a question, or make a suggestion, then go to the contact page of my website at davidjkirshner.com. Best of all, everything is free. Now back to the show. So, I wrote a 5-part fictional book series. I really enjoyed writing it. There's a lot of very useful information in there if you're so inclined. And I thought it would be fun to have those 5 parts put into audio format. And I reached out to my narrator who had done the first 4 parts to find out where he was with his move from Canada. I thought he was going to Michigan. It turns out he went to Delaware. But anyway, to see where he was, you know, where am I in the queue? Because he's got other, obviously he's got other works, titles that he's working on. And he replied back that, you know, he had to do some re-recordings on some stuff because he doesn't have a studio set up yet completely and some things got trashed and whatever. But then he provided a screenshot of the sales page from the audiobook ACX. We have like a little, when you publish a book and you have it put in audio format, you can track the sales and all that. You know, he said something which, you know, was a bit off-putting, but, you know, it was true. The sales figures that I thought I was going to get have not reached that point yet. And he's noticed it, and because he's on a shared royalty plan with me. So he gets, like, because I didn't have a whole bunch of money to pay for it. So we did a shared royalty plan. It's one of the options in ACX. And based on what he wrote, he's looking at that sales page and he's regretting that decision. But there are contracts involved, so he can't just walk away. But he did say, he said, you know, if all things being equal, he would not record the 5th book, but out of a moral obligation, he felt compelled to do it since he had done the other 4 parts. And this was in part and parcel to lagging audiobook sales. Sorry about that. I did everything I could, and I still continue to do everything I can to help drive sales, whether it be in print format, electronic format, or in audio format. So, I do still have codes available to me for free copies of the audiobooks. So just email me at djkpublishinghouse@gmail.com. That's djkpublishinghouse@gmail.com. Just send me an email and I'll send you a code for a free copy. So of all 4 parts, you know, I got codes for all 4 audiobooks. So just shoot me an email, djkpublishinghouse@gmail.com, and you'll get some codes. And then you'll get some free copies. The only condition that I ever put on any of that is, if I give you a free code, you're obligated to leave a review of the book. Because of the way that the algorithms work in ACX and with Amazon as well. The more reviews, the higher they put it up on their returned results list. When people start typing in things like prepper or survival or whatever, if it's got a keyword associated with something that's in my book, then it'll pop up and it'll move me up the list. So I would appreciate it if you do that. That'd be great. But actually, what I wanted to cover today, so I got a buddy of mine, and he sent me we text each other. We spend a lot of time texting. We're you know, we don't always have time to have a dedicated phone call because we're busy doing other things. My father-in-law and I, we bought a zero-turn mower. And the reason I even sent it to my friend was because he had just bought a piece of property out in the country. And we were at the soccer game together. And he was like, dude, look what I got, man. I got a zero-turn. Woo, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, blah, 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 blah. And he was very happy. He was very excited. And it just so happened that one was available. We bought a used one. Because who the hell is going to pay $3,500 for a lawnmower? You know, hey, you know, I had a riding mower. It worked just fine. But a zero-turn that's got a mowing deck that's a foot wider, that makes things go a lot faster. Anyway, so I took a picture of it and I sent it to him. And I said, hey, man, I got a used zero-turn. He was like, oh, my God, you're such a dork. But I've been working on learning how to drive it. You know, because it's been a while since I worked on golf courses, and they didn't necessarily have the zero turn handlebars. You know, it's like driving a tank nowadays with these levers. But anyway, so that kind of started the conversation, and he said something to me. Said he was still working on his bug out vision, and I replied to him. I said, you know, given your location, I wouldn't think that you would need to bug out so much as get home. Because where he lives now is about 45 minutes to an hour north of the city. So he's a mailman, postal carrier type. And so he's got, you know, if you're going to walk that's a while. You're going to be walking for a day or more, depending on what you run into. If we have a problem and he can't get back or whatever, right? So it's mostly for an EMP type style event. But what I replied to him was, you know, he drives an older car to save money. It doesn't, you know, it's not the newest, latest, greatest 2021 model or anything like that, or 2022 model or. But, you know, I said, you know, I would think that you would need a get home bag or get home instead of bug out. So I replied to him. I said, your car should have a get home bag plus a box with tools, parts, gear for basic vehicle repairs. And then I just picked up my book. I'd already gave him a copy. Because he's a friend of mine. I gave him a copy of the book, Preparing to Prepare. A general guide to self-sufficiency and preparedness. And I gave a couple copies to some friends. And they've been reading through it. They find it very intriguing. They ask me questions all the time. And so I told him, I said, review chapter 2, vehicle planning section, pages 15 and 16, and it'll give you a good place to start. So that section is all about what items you could have in your car as a hedge to get home. So if you're driving, obviously, an older car like he is, you're going to want maybe some spare parts to be able to try and make some repairs on your own so that you don't have to abandon the vehicle and walk the rest of the way. You could actually make it just a quick repair that takes, you know, 10 to 20 minutes or so, maybe 30 minutes max, and you can get back on the road. In that section, it reads, when it comes to travel, every car should have a basic emergency breakdown bag / tote complete with first aid kit. For example, each car should have the following. So this was my recommendation for every one of your vehicles, regardless of whether or not it's just for in-town driving or if you use it for longer trips. Like for instance, my job, they bought a company here in Columbus, and the company that they bought had an office in Northeast Columbus. So my employer closed their downtown office, which was 4 miles from me, in lieu of moving everybody out to this new location, which is outside the Outer Belt, which instead of 4 miles, it's now a 15-mile round trip, or 15-mile one-way trip. The problem with that is, for me to get from A to B, A being my house, B being the new office, I have to go on interstates, or I have to weave my way through several not-so-friendly neighborhoods in the downtown area in order to get to the right road that would take me there if I don't want to get on an interstate. I have to get on one Ohio route, I have to get on the outer loop, and then I have to get on an interstate. And, you know, me and every other Tom, Dick, and Harry in Columbus are getting on the same three roads. So if there is an EMP, forget it. I'm getting out and walking. Because I'm not swapping out all these computer parts. Plus, everybody else's car is on the road, and now I can't go anywhere. It's a giant parking lot. It's like playing Frogger with no moving cars, okay? It's not going to work. But what I told him, because he had the older car, you know, so in this kit, you would have dried kindling, which would be some sort of, you know, wood, moss, or even lint, fire starter cubes, a robust first aid kit, fix a flat tire sealant, flashlight / lantern, functioning spare tire. That's an important one people overlook. They just assume that the spare tire is good to go all the time. And then they go and pop the thing out and they find out that the tire and the trunk is flat. So that's not going to do you any good. Spare fuses, jumper cables, matches or lighter, some motor oil. I recommend about 200 feet of paracord in case you need to make a shelter if you're walking. A portable air pump you can plug into your cigarette lighter. Maybe some putty strips for high temperature lines like from your gas tank or radiator, water lines, things of that nature. Radiator fluid, a rain suit, possibly a reflective hazard triangle, a reflective vest so people can see you if you're working on your car on the side of the road. You don't want to get hit. Roadside flares fall in that same vein. Solar blanket, tarp, toe straps, some water, and windshield washer fluid. Funny story about the windshield washer fluid. So my wife and I were driving from Columbus back to our home in Charlotte in the 1990s. And she had a little Honda Accord. And, you know, we were young. And every place that we went didn't have windshield washer fluid. We were coming home in a winter storm. We're, you know, depending on where we were and the altitude. Because when you drive from Ohio to back to Charlotte, you got to drive through the Appalachian Mountain Range. So you're going up and down in elevation, and it can do wonders with the weather. And so, you know, you'll be down in a valley, it'll be raining, misty rain, something like that. And then you'll go up in altitude, and then, you know, you can only see 50 feet because there's so much snow. You know, so we were driving in that kind of stuff, and my wife is quite prodigious at using her windshield washer fluid to clean her windshield all the time. And this is something that I've gotten on her about. You know, if there's a single raindrop on there, she complains about it, because when she wears contacts, when she's driving, her eyes focus on that raindrop, and she just has to get rid of it. And, you know, and I've told her, I said, look, you remember when we were driving through the mountains, and, you know, we stopped. She ran out of windshield washer fluid, and we stopped. We tried to get some more, and every place we went, they didn't have any. Everything was sold out. So my wife took a bottle of water and put it into the windshield washer fluid reservoir, and it was so cold, it immediately cracked. Now, it didn't matter if we could find it or not. The reservoir wasn't going to hold any water, any fluid. So now, we literally had to drive another 200 miles through the mountains where I would get up behind an 18-wheeler. I would tailgate the 18-wheeler so that I would get the wash off of the road, off of their tires, enough of it to get up on our windshield so that I could clean the windshield and then pull out and zip around them. And then we could drive another you know, 5, 10, 12 miles or so without having to spritz or attempt to spritz the windshield washer. And every time it would get dirty again from the road salt and the snow or whatever it was, you know, I would get up behind an 18-wheeler and get that spray off of their tires so I could clean off the windshield. It's incredibly dangerous. Incredibly dangerous. But that's what we had to do. So now, you know, we always make sure we carry a bottle of it just because of that. One of the other things that's part of this section says all of these items noted, except for the spare tire, obviously, should fit snugly into a medium-sized tote. In addition, if all items are in a tote, it will help prevent spillage and leakage. So you just don't want those things rolling around in your car, in your trunk. If you or any family member drives long stretches in remote areas, you might also want to consider some elements of a get-home bag kit. In addition to the breakdown bin, these contents might consist of a one-man tent, a negative 20-degree sleeping bag, food, 3 days to a week. I like to pack in my hunting bag and on when I know I'm going on a trip. I will put this in my car, and it's like these 72-hour meal kits from my Patriot Supply. And I have some from other suppliers as well. That's just the first one that popped in my head. But they're great. I love them. I take them on hunting trips. When I'm in a duck blind, I bring my little propane stove, and you know, I just throw it in a pot, or you know, I boil up some water and put it into the bag, depending on what it is I'm cooking. So those things are great. I love them. Obviously, the single burner stove is part of this get home bag bulleted list. So after that, I recommended that you need to think seasonally, meaning, as fall approaches, grab a bag of kitty litter or sand in the bag with the tire chains, if that's applicable to your area, and put them in your trunk as winter approaches. The extra weight will also aid you in traction. So that was part of it. And then he came back later on and said, hey, by the way, I just bought a generator. It's just something temporary until we can get our solar panels. And I said, what are you planning on running? Review chapter 4, electricity section, pages 61 through 66, and chapter 4, laundry scenarios and options sections, pages 76 through 78. So in those pages, I literally break down all the different things that you could do. And we got into a conversation about the Tesla Powerwall versus the Generac and the Enphase competitors to the Tesla Powerwall. And you can couple those with your solar system, and basically you can charge them from the grid. And, when the power goes out, you've more or less got 3 days worth of energy stored up in basically what amounts to a battery backup. And then you can have it tied to your panels, and your panels will keep it charged. But if that's the way of things, you know, you definitely want to make sure that you only run specific circuits. Because your batteries won't be able to keep up if you're trying to power your whole home. That's just ridiculous. I would never try to do that. But I would definitely try and keep power to possibly the hot water heater, maybe the washer and dryer, and the stove, and the refrigerator, maybe a chest freezer, sump pump, well pump. That would be the limit of it. I would make sure that whatever home I bought had a wood-burning fireplace or a wood stove. Because you can use those to supplement your winter heating problems. I would not try and run a furnace or an air conditioning unit, you know, off of solar. That would be too much of a pull. I wouldn't do that. But then he sent me a couple YouTube videos: Tesla versus Generac Power Cell, Tesla versus Enphase battery, and 3 reason Enphase beats Tesla. So I've got those videos to watch. So we'll talk about those next week. But I just want to, you know, kind of let you know what was going on with me. You know, why there wasn't a show last week. Basically, I had too many other obligations, is the long and the short of it. So, and this week I just couldn't do it. Then I saw Buttigieg was out on paternity leave, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. the guy who runs the State Department, or not the State Department, the guy that handles this federal agency that's responsible for all this stuff, is home playing with his kids for 2 months. That's just No. That's just ridiculous. And on top of that, because he did this, I think that you can rest assured, if his name is on a ballot, he will not get into office, because whoever's running against him will bring up his horrid handling of this entire situation with the supply chain. There's no way. So he's killed his political career. Thank you, Lord. There's a light at the end of the tunnel that is Pete Buttigieg. So we don't have to deal with that guy. So that'd be great. But I think that's going to be it for today. I think I'm good. I think I irritated enough people today. So we'll talk again next week. Be sure to hit me up on an email at djkpublishinghouse@gmail.com. If you want some free codes to get, or some codes to get free copies of my the first four parts of the audiobook, again, the only caveat is that I ask that you leave feedback on the website there, whether it's the ACX website or Amazon or wherever. That would be great. So maybe I can make my narrator a little happier if he sees some increased audio sales. But I can't do anything about it. I talk about it all the time on my podcast. It's up there on my website. I'm trying to book time to get interviews on other podcasts to kind of promote the books. I mean, I'm pretty much, and I've done the, Amazon has a, like an ads type of thing that I can pay for, per click, or, they put your ad, a mention for, your books and things like that. And I did that, and that, I mean, that helped with the paperbacks, but it didn't help so much with the audio books. So I don't know. I got to figure something out, start making some other people some money now that they're, kind of dependent on me. So, and now I'm dependent on you. All right, guys. You have a good weekend, and we'll talk again next week. Oh, I did learn my lesson, though. In episode 21, I recorded that show on across Wednesday and Thursday, and what I really should have done was I should have waited until Friday to record the episode, because they kicked the can down the road on Friday morning, and then so now I'm trying to make it a point of recording the shows on Friday so that I get a full week, work week. Obviously I don't need any more fodder. This installed installation or administration does enough on its own to create chaos and havoc and mayhem that I have plenty of topics to talk about. I don't want this show to be all about giant gab fest and gripe fest about what this administration is doing. I do want to convey my knowledge to you over preparedness, and so I think I'm going to have to dial it back on the jackassery minute, and seriously just limit myself to 10 or 15 minutes, and then the rest of it is preparedness focused. So that is my pledge to you. All right, guys, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Happy Hunger Games, and may the odds be ever in your favor.